Okay, let's unpack this. We're diving into a true story today that feels less like a historical event we understand and more like a corrupted audio file from a cold case.
Right, full of these strange gaps, conflicting signals, and just this chilling silence where you expect answers.
Exactly. We're talking about the Sauter family and the baffling disappearance of five children, Christmas Eve, 1945.
And our sources for this deep dive, they let us look at this mystery from a pretty unique angle. We've got a detailed account of the Sauter case itself, you know, the fire, the immediate aftermath, the decades of just unanswered questions.
And crucially, we also have these excerpts from production guides, guides on how to actually craft eerie, unsolved mystery audio stories. That's
Yes.
right. So our mission isn't just to recount the tragic facts. We want to explore the Sauter case through the lens of those production guides.
Like, what elements of this story just inherently build that suspense?
Yeah, and how does the sheer lack of resolution create a kind of horror? We're going to examine the bizarre anomalies, the contradictions.
The things that make this feel less like a crime someone solved and more like something that just vanished.
Leaving behind static and, well, ghosts in the recording.
It's really about understanding why this specific set of circumstances creates such a deep sense of unease. The guides, they suggest focusing on the unseen, right? The unexplained.
The disruption of expectation.
Exactly. And the Sauter case, well, delivers on all of that. Let's set that scene first.
Okay. Christmas Eve, 1945, Fayetteville, West Virginia. Picture it. Quiet night, maybe snow falling. A family, George and Jenny Sauter, their nine kids tucked in, waiting for Christmas morning. That peaceful domestic scene, that's the baseline.
Yeah, because that tranquility is just shattered. Abruptly, George and Jen, they're ripped awake, smell of smoke, the roar of flames.
Law of terrifying.
They manage this desperate escape, pulling four of their children outside to safety. But when they turn back, the fire's just too intense.
And five children, Maurice, Martha, Louie, Jenny, and Betty, they're still inside.
And this, right here, is where the logic just starts to break down, where that audio file, you know, it starts to get corrupted.
Because after the fire consumes the house, basically reduces it to ash and debris, the search starts for the remains of those five children.
And what was not found? That's the most chilling part.
Alas.
Amidst all the charred wreckage, they found the children's beds, metal frames, strangely intact, considering.
Intact after a fire like that.
Right. But then, digging through the ash where the bedrooms actually were, absolutely no bones, no teeth, no human remains of any kind.
Wait, none. But the fire was described as ferocious, right? Melted window glass.
Precisely. It defies all conventional understanding. How does a blaze that intense destroy a house, melt glass, but completely erase five bodies, yet leave their beds behind? It just doesn't make sense.
It's a foundational anomaly. Right away, it tells you this isn't some simple tragedy.
No.
And then you start getting these fragmented clues layered on top, like unreliable transcripts from the scene.
Yes, like echoes in the background of a recording almost. Some neighbors claim they saw the Sauter children that night. Their small faces pressed against the windows of a dark car, speeding away from the scene before the fire was even raging.
Hold on. Before the fire was fully involved, that sounds less like escape and more like removal.
Exactly. And adding another layer of, like, confusing audio, others swore they heard crying, coming from the woods behind the property that same night.
Crying. Okay, so these aren't clear facts. They're conflicting snippets.
Distorted voices on a tape, almost. It makes it hard to know the truth, but impossible to ignore that something was deeply wrong.
And beyond these strange sightings, there were also clear signs of, well, calculated action that
Oh,
evening.
yeah. The ladder. George always kept a ladder propped against the house.
The one they would have desperately needed to reach the kids upstairs.
Gone. Just
And
removed.
not burned, just
But missing.
missing. And the phone lines. They weren't destroyed by the fire. Someone had neatly severed them before the fire even started. Wow. So planning, intent to isolate the family, stop them calling for help?
Prevent any escape through upper windows, maybe.
Yeah.
It feels like a deliberate edit in the recording, you know, silencing that immediate connection.
And then there's that specific, really chilling eyewitness account, a local bus driver.
F.J. Morris.
Yeah.
He reported seeing a man standing near the house just moments before the screams apparently started.
Doing what?
He said the man lobbed what looked like a ball of fire onto the Sauter roof.
A ball of fire. That's not vague. That's a direct account of arson. A potential suspect right there.
It feels like finding a clear soundbite amidst all the static, doesn't it? But weirdly, it leads nowhere definitive.
Just another unresolved thread in this this tangled mess.
Yeah, which takes us to the decades that followed. The long, agonizing search. All those false hopes, leads that just seemed to, well, evaporate.
George and Jenny Sauter, they never stopped looking. For 30 years, they put everything into finding their kids. They were convinced they survived.
And the later clues just added to the confusion. They felt like these fragmented pieces that just refused to form a clear picture.
Like what?
Well, there was a shallow grave discovered decades later. It had bone fragments.
Okay.
But the testing couldn't conclusively identify them. Not as human, not as belonging to the children. Yeah. It just fizzled out.
Why couldn't they identify them? What kind of bones were they even? It's like finding a partial recording, degraded. You know something is there.
But you can't make out the message.
Exactly.
And then, what about that photograph? In 1968, right? 23 years after the fire.
Yes. The Sauters received a photograph in the mail. Showed this handsome young man, looked like he was maybe in New York City.
And the note.
The note on the back just read, Louis Sauter, I love brother Frankie. Oh, little boys, A90132 or 35.
Louis Sauter. And George and Jenny, they were convinced.
Instantly. They said he had Louis's unmistakable eyes.
I mean, how reliable is that after 23 years? And what happened with that lead? Well, that's just it. It's another thread that seems to lead nowhere. The production guides, how do they suggest handling stuff like this? Ambiguous leads.
They often say present them without confirming anything. Let the listener's own mind fill in the terrifying possibilities.
Right. Is this Louis? If it is, where has he been? What does eel boys even mean? The case deliberately denies you that satisfying resolution.
Leaves you hanging, like seeing a pattern in static that never quite resolves.
Mm-hmm.
So looking at this through that lens, the audio production guides for eerie mysteries, these elements aren't just tragic facts, are they? They're like building blocks for suspense, for horror.
Absolutely. The guides really emphasize that the horror isn't always in what you show, but what you don't.
The focus on what's missing.
Exactly. The kids, the remains, the logical explanation, that's the core terror. And the contradictory evidence, like those intact beds amidst modal destruction,
yeah.
It creates this profound cognitive dissonance for you, the listener.
Your brain struggles to make sense of it.
And that struggle breeds unease. And then the signs of calculated action, severed phone lines, missing ladder, suspected arson.
Not random.
Not random at all. They suggest an unseen force, some deliberate, sinister intelligence at work. Even if you never know who or what it was. The guides say make those moments sharp, impactful. Imagine the sound of a wire being cut.
Yeah.
Then the silence.
Yeah. And specific details, even small ones like hearing crying in the woods or seeing those small faces pressed against the windows.
They become incredibly powerful, haunting images in audio. Visceral, unsettling things that linger.
The horror comes from the implication, right? That feeling of being on the edge of understanding something awful without ever fully grasping it.
Makes perfect sense why this case is still so compelling, so unsettling. It defies easy answers. It's not just a fire, it's a vanishing.
It's not just an investigation, it's decades of, well, fruitless searching.
Yeah, it fits that idea perfectly. Sometimes the most terrifying stories aren't explained. They're just hinted at, remaining just out of sight.
Leaving you with that chilling feeling that something profoundly wrong happened and the truth is just lost, locked away.
Like a haunted audio file, full of static, incomplete recordings, conflicting voices, unanswered questions, echoing across the decades, refusing to be silenced.
So what does this all mean? I mean, the Sauter case, it remains the stark reminder, doesn't it? Sometimes the most terrifying stories are where the perpetrators vanish as completely as their victims.
Leaving only questions. And that chilling silence where answers should be.
It really underscores how fragile our sense of security is when faced with things that just refuse to fit our understanding of reality.
So consider this. How much scarier does the world become when things vanish without a trace? Is it possible that some doors are locked not to keep things out?
But to ensure that once something is inside, it can never truly leave.